HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 115, recorded live Friday, May 23rd, 2008. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik R80 Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott and Carl talk about the joy of programming and getting back to basics.
Hey, guess what? This is Carl Franklin back on Hansel Minutes with Scott Hanselman. Good to be back, Scott.
It's the return of the Franklin. I'm thrilled to have you back. Our year-long blood feud is finally over.
Oh, come on, man. People are going to say stuff about that.
No, I'm just kidding. No, I started working at Microsoft, I started going to a lot of conferences and I would meet people in the hallway and I would say, oh, dude, we have to do a talk.
And it's been great. You've gotten a lot of great stuff. I've been listening.
It's been a pretty good run. I mean, having a lot of fun. And, you know, you meet certain people and you just say, oh, I got to do a show. Next thing you know, I blink and a couple of months has gone by without Carl. And people are like, what's going on? Where's Carl?
Yeah. Well, you know, we've all got our lives, our busy lives. And so it's good to be back talking to you again. We're going to talk today about the joy of programming.
Yeah, and I think that maybe a return to the basics, because I think that's some of the fun aspects of
this is something Richard and I have been talking about recently. We've recorded now .NET Rock shows all the way into July. We've got a whole bunch of them stacked up because this is the conference season, you know.
Right.
But we were just talking lately about how, you know, back in the older days of .NET Rocks, we were really talking more about the technology and about the things that the technology did, just like some of the basic fundamental stuff, which is where I see a lot of people, you know, a lot of people who are new to .NET. Obviously, we've got a lot of newbies every day coming into .NET, and they didn't grow up with us, you know, as we sort of progressed from just trying to figure out this technology to the more abstract things. And now seems like we're a little ivory tower-ish these days. So it's good to get back
and
to
I
basics.
Think that when someone says newbie, there's always that implication that that's, you know, a bad thing. I mean, if I started programming in Scala tomorrow, I would be a newbie and that's okay.
Totally.
But I think that the computer science fundamentals though are computer science fundamentals. And I think that, you know, I was always frustrated when people would give me a hassle about my interview questions. You know, I wrote that big long blog post years ago about top, you know, .NET interview questions that everyone should be able to answer.
Yeah.
And I got a bunch of accusations. You know, you're an elitist. No one should know those things. Mm. And some of them I thought were pretty basic computer science type stuff. And there'll always be the people that think that one person is trying to promote, you know, memorizing MSDN as a way to get job security. But I think that we, the .NET community, could all use a little refresher course on the basics.
Absolutely.
You know, basics of OO, basics of interface design, get back to the patterns, start rereading our Fowler books and rereading our Gang of Four stuff. And,
yeah.
You know, that's why I try to do the weekly source code, you know, reading as much code as I can, because I really believe that you become a better programmer by reading great programmers' code. You know, you don't become a good book writer by writing more books. I think you have to read as many as possible.
You know, when I was just learning to program, you know, it was back in, what, 84, 85, you know, my father's TRS-80 Model 4, you know, the cartoon guide to computer science. And I had the operating system commands and the programming language. And I just locked myself in the room and I was just so into the whole idea of, you know, making this archaic little box do something that, you know, would be perceived as wizardry. You know, and always was into two things, communications and audio, always throughout my whole entire career. Those two things have really sort of been the backbone of everything I love to do with computers. And I've been lucky that I've been able to do what I love you know, whether it's programming or music or whatever. But I don't know. Every once in a while, you run into people who have lost the joy. And every once in a while, it happens to us, too. We get caught up in our jobs and the things that we have to do. And so I wanted to talk, when I'm talking to you here, I wanted to tell you a couple of things about what I really don't like, character traits that I don't like in people or behaviors that I don't like in people in this business. So this is very odd for me to be complaining about stuff, but, and I'm not really. I'm just pointing out behaviors I don't like when I exhibit them and when other people exhibit them.
Right.
And one of them is pretense. Pretension just drives me absolutely crazy. Just the sort of griping, whining, you know, preoccupied, pretentious kind of stuff. You know, the antithesis of that is the mentors that I had. If it weren't for them, if it weren't for the people who actually loved to share their knowledge and, you know, were happy to answer any questions and not make you feel like an idiot, if it weren't for those people, I might not have gotten into it. I mean,
yeah,
those people were absolutely
so
vital in the early stages of my career.
I mean, think about how many people out there that are .NET newbies that could have one or two lousy experiences. That could be something as simple as someone being really cruel to them in a forum, or something more complicated, like they weren't able to find what they wanted on, you know, using a search engine.
Right.
All of those things add up to pushing them down, you know, and saying, you know, maybe this isn't for you. And we have to be really careful. I think as people, just the fact that we're listening to a podcast right now, I think puts us in some top tier of people who care. And I think that what can we do to make sure that the new folks and the folks that are at risk, the at-risk youth of .NET, who may very well be 30, 40, 50 years old, but, you know, the new people, what can we do to make sure that, that they don't have those lousy experiences?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you do what we do, which is to just be completely open and sharing about what we know. And one thing that I try to encourage in people is to ask questions, you know, no matter, don't feel stupid because you have a question. There's no such thing as a dumb question. And this is why I really dislike the behavior of sort of putting people down for asking a question. You know what I'm saying? And that just drives me crazy.
It's funny that you mentioned that. I had an interesting kind of discussion / I wouldn't say an argument, but a discussion with my wife where, you know how wives can remember stuff going back forever, right?
So remember in 1972 when you asked me when I asked you if this dress made me look fat and you said,
we're driving to the movies and she says out of the blue, she's like, you know, about 6 years ago, and I was like, oh, no. 6 years ago, we were at a conference. I brought her along with me. And a guy came up and asked you a question after a presentation. And this is my wife talking to me. And she said, and you said, by asking that question, you're telling me that you really have no idea what you're doing. And it was like, you know, you're hearing your own words coming back to you.
Right, right, right.
And
you're
just
cringing.
Wanted to die.
Right.
Because I remember that, actually, you know. It wasn't necessarily an example of, you know, 6 years ago, something I don't remember and my wife does. But this is one of those things where it was a perfect storm of bad day.
Yeah.
And then someone comes up and asks you some question like, so XML, is that going to replace Java?
Yeah, something.
And then you snap at them.
Yeah.
And you just, and years later, half a decade later, I am cringing at
that. You got the blue meanies.
And I tell you, that was a defining moment for me where I really try not to be a jerk.
Right.
When people are asking, dumb question isn't the right word, you know?
Just an uninformed question. It's just a basic question, right?
You know, uninformed is such a nicer way to phrase it than ignorant.
Yeah.
Because ignorant has become a really bad, painful way to phrase uninformed.
Yep.
Because I am decidedly uninformed on a number of things.
Oh, me too.
I think it's okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. There are lots of things in this in .NET development that I really don't have interest in.
And recognizing that is so important. I mean, recognizing that, you know, I have no idea about XYZ, or even more, realizing that you've forgotten it.
Right.
You know, like I got a question in the email recently about WCF, about Windows Communication Foundation. And, you know, it's been 8 months since I've been thinking deeply about that. And frankly, I don't know what the current, you know, May 2008 thoughts are around WCF. So I told the guy what I thought, but I said, listen, I don't know if this is the current thinking right now. So, you know, the way to be the smartest man in the room is to be the first to say, I don't know.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I usually assume that I am not the smartest man in the room, especially if Rory is in the room with me.
Yeah. There's this other behavior that is very similar, which is sort of, you see people who have this realm of knowledge about a particular technology or something that's very specific, right? And they feel they're experts in that topic, and they may be experts in that topic. Yeah. And then, you know, to sit on the high horse and, you know, and tell everybody else that unless they're doing it their way, then they, you know, or thinking the way that they think about it, then, you know, they're wrong. This sort of black and white sort of belittling of their peers, really, because they're doing something differently. And some software is an exact science. There are some things that scientifically can be done right, and that's it. But more often, there are so many different permutations of ways and architectures of ways to do things that I just find that completely pretentious.
Yeah, so, it's really difficult to.
I mean, what I want is instead of always do this, you know, because I said so, what I want is a discussion of why. I want to know why.
Absolutely.
And I want to know what the alternatives are and what the pros and cons are. And that's the kind of discussion I want to have so I can make up my own mind.
You know, and I've found when working with newer programmers that rather than focusing so much on what you should do and patterns, which are basically declarations of correctness, that trying to think about things in the inverse, thinking about anti-patterns, saying that I don't know what the right solution is,
but I know what not to do.
Because I know what not to do, exactly. Yeah. Because, you know, this young person that I'm, you know, supposed to be mentoring may very well have a better solution in his head.
Yeah.
His or her head, and they may come up with an elegant solution that I never even thought of. So it would be presumptuous of me to indicate that this is the way to do it. Mm. But I can pretty much say this is not the way to do it. You know, and that's where you start getting into basics of computer science and start saying that, you know, this doubly nested or triply nested for loop won't scale beyond a certain number of items in the list.
Yeah.
Therefore, this is what hash tables are for. And, you know, so here's the anti-pattern.
Yeah. Getting back to this whole loving what you do thing, I just really can't imagine not being able to program the way that I like to program, to write code. I mean, and that's why I did it in the first place, is because I loved it. You know what I mean?
Well, I saw your recent DNR TV that you did with a MIDI. You hooked up a .NET remoting and a freaking piano keyboard so that you could control a player piano remotely. And I was just like, you had such an excitement in your voice while you were doing it. I was just like, oh Lord, you know, this is how Carl spends his weekends. And I'm thinking to myself, what are my hobbies? I don't really have any, but it's hooking up MIDI to a player piano sounds like a pretty good time to.
It's something totally useless, but it's impressive.
No, it's not useful at all. It's fun though.
It's fun, exactly. That's what it
is. Yeah, I mean, I've spent more time getting the baby cams to work so that I can see my sons, you know, when they're sleeping, and make sure that, you know, he hasn't pushed a pillow over his head.
Right.
Or whatever, you know. You get a 5-month-old, you worry about these things. So I've spent the last 5 months trying to get the baby webcam just right.
Right.
But, you know, and I really am hoping to pass that kind of joy on to them, the joy of construction.
Yeah.
I guess that's really what it is. It's the joy of creation, whether you're an artist or whether you're a person who works with wood.
It's absolutely that, Scott.
It's creation.
You nailed it.
When I meet people, I'm realizing more and more that people I can't relate to are those who don't have that excitement about, I can make that.
Yeah.
You know what it is? I realize what it is. It's the sense of empowerment.
Sure.
When I go and talk to middle schools and high schools about software, one of my standard middle school presentation involves opening up Notepad and typing in the alphabet. And then we go down to debug.exe and we look at, you know, how those, you know, what's a bit, what's a byte, how did ABCD get, get represented. And then we go all the way up over about an hour, hour and a half talk until most kids' attention span is gone.
Hmm.
And we get to the point where we show them how an MP3 is encoded.
Yeah.
Or I'll go into, you know, a fun example for a 10-year-old is to open up Paint mm-hmm. and draw a bunch of colored squares, red, green, blue.
Right.
And then show them how that gets red, green, blue encoded on disk.
Right.
And, you know, when you do this, maybe 20% of them goes, oh. And then suddenly you can almost hear the neurons firing.
Right. Oh, it's such a wonderful thing.
You know, and they suddenly figure out that their TiVo has a hard drive in it.
Right.
And that hard drive works pretty much like an RCA Victor standard turntable did 80 years ago.
Yeah.
And that all the world connects.
Yeah.
And then the other 80% has this very kind of like, that's kind of cool. And
right.
I guess that's fine. And they won't be constructors. Maybe they'll be, I don't know, marketers or suits of some kind. But man, you know, when people who create are so much more, healthy and enthusiastic about life. I've got a great friend of mine who is a programmer, and I just assumed he programmed in his spare time. I went over to his house, and he opened up his garage, and it was this amazing shop for woodworking.
Nice.
And I realized this guy has to create.
Right.
Whether it's software or whether it's, you know, and you go over to his house, and it's like, oh, yeah, I made that table. Oh, yeah, and this, oh, yeah, you know, the kids needed a chair, so I made that.
Right.
Like what a sense of empowerment one must have. I mean, I can't hang a picture.
Yeah.
Although if I do, of course, I use lasers to do it, though.
Well, you get the same spark of creating, you know, arranged electrons. So.
Yeah, exactly. Isn't that funny though? Electrons are they're cheaper than
cheaper than molecules.
Cheaper than molecules, but there's a lot of work to put together some molecules.
That's right.
I'm always impressed. You know, it's interesting. It would be interesting to hear from the listeners what their hobbies are and if there is a parallel between the personality type that they are, the fact that they are creating with software, and what they have created that is not software. Do you know how to make the possible out of the impossible? Well, the .NET ninjas at Telerik do. They just released a huge pack of web controls all built on top of ASP.NET Ajax that'll help you build impossibly fast and interactive applications in no time at all. They've made the impossible possible in desktop development. If you think you can't have a carousel component in WinForms, well, you can. Their Windows Forms suite features a super powerful grid view control and 32 other crazy desktop components that'll give you dazzling WPF-like features, but in WinForms. They do the same thing in reporting solutions with a new design surface like nothing else. Looks just like graph paper. Gives you advanced page layout capabilities. Makes it feel more like a graphic design software than a reporting solution. Go check them out at Telerik.com and be a .NET ninja. And thanks for listening.
You know, I've said this before on various shows, but I think, and especially for men, right? Because, you know, you wonder why a lot of software developers are men, most of them.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of have this theory, and it's kind of wacky, but I have this theory that since, you know, a man's role biologically in reproduction is very limited. You know, it's really the woman who creates life. I mean, she,
yeah, I was
she basically
involved early
does
on.
All the work. Yeah, yeah. We were both involved for very short periods of time. And that this is a way that we can sort of create an intelligence, you know. And it's almost, if you look at it biologically, you know, what motivates us to create software, it is sort of, I mean, when you write programs, they are sort of like little children. You have to sort of maintain them and help them grow up. And, you know, you see them get smarter and smarter, and then they stop growing. And then you know, visit them in the nursing home from time to time. But you know, and I had a woman friend who was a developer, and I told her this theory, and she said, interesting. And then we were talking about, you know, do you have children? She says, no, I had a hysterectomy. I can't have children. Isn't that interesting? Woman programmer can't have children.
Wow. So I don't know if this is going to cause a controversy or if we're going to get in trouble.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I wasn't exactly the direction I thought you were going, but what I'm hearing you say is that here is a person who was unable to create in some way, but found an outlet regardless.
Could not create an intelligence, you know, couldn't reproduce, and found a way to do that. I mean, it's a weird, wild, deep-rooted theory that I have, and it might be total BS, but I'd like to hear what other people think about it.
I think that our many female listeners should send you email directly.
I certainly do not mean to offend. You know, the other thing that I like to do creative-wise is put machines together. I love buying, I love going to Newegg and ordering up the parts, getting boxes, unpacking them and putting a machine together and installing the software. I love that. That's one of my favorite things to do in the whole world.
You know why I like doing that too? It's funny. I like doing that. I like putting together a fresh machine because it's hard, but it's not difficult.
Right.
You know, it's not oppressively.
You got to know what you're doing. But,
right, but it's not
difficult.
The unknown. It's not like you're paving new ground.
Right. It's a relaxing Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's the difference between designing and building a new engine versus changing the oil on your existing car. You know,
right.
One can be very relaxing because you know that it requires some amount of skill, but not so much skill that it's going to have you racking your brain.
Right. Unless, of course, you get some sort of strange BIOS problem that is causing
blue screen. True, but I tell you, I just last week I had like the first blue screen in my on my quad PC, the super PC we built with Jeff Atwood.
Right.
I had my first blue screen, ever, and I was freaking out. I was like, "What is going on?" It turned out to be some software that I installed,
driver or something.
It was VMware, and I removed it and everything's back. And I mean, this is a machine that stays up for months. I reboot this machine. On the solstices, but rarely else. And I have to say that it is a constant source of pride that Jeff and I were able to put this thing together, and he helped me get it to rock solid.
Yeah.
I can do 24-hour renders of videos that I do, and I have no concern at all that this thing is going to blow up when I wake up the next morning.
Yep. And, my machine is the same way. My beast that I put together.
Nothing. There were years when I would wake up and find a machine that blue screened in the middle of the night.
Right.
What a horrible feeling.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think that putting together machines is a really good way for people to not only relax, but to also, indirectly learn more about how hardware works.
Now, your kids are young yet, but, I mean, this is something that I like to share with my older daughter, is putting a machine together, showing how it works, how it goes together.
I think that's a really great thing. I'm really looking forward to that. I went and bought a kit, a little wood kit. It was basically like a toy screwdriver and screws and some blocks. And, a miracle happens and a dump truck comes out of it. And Zenzo, my son, is 2.5. And I think it's about 2 years too soon.
Yeah.
I tried though. I really thought that we could build this, but his attention span was too limited. But the wife noticed and she's like, "You just really want to take him into the garage and build something, don't you?" If I didn't think he would take a hammer directly into the wall and destroy the house, I would love to give this guy a hammer and nails and see what he could do with a 2x4. We'll see though. Maybe he's not a creator. Maybe he's a connector, or maybe he's a nurturer, or some other kind of person.
Now, all your years at Carillion, you were Mr. ASP.NET web guy. Was there ever a time where you regretted the fact that you chose this line of work? I mean, where you just got so oppressively unfun that you were just like, "Oh, this is why did I sign up for this?"
Yeah. It's funny. I actually go through a crisis of conscience usually about once a year.
Yeah.
It's usually when nothing works. It's usually when my body is breaking down. When this line of work is beginning to physically hurt me.
Oh, okay.
People who are this kind of personality, the creator personality, I think obsess because they want it to be right.
Right.
And that involves sitting in uncomfortable positions cramped for very long periods of time.
Yeah.
And that adds up into unhealthy, aspects of your body. I've got a bad back and I've got bad hands. And I keep thinking, I was talking to Richard Campbell last week. He's maybe getting arthritis in his fingers,
Yeah.
All programmers can tell you a story about like, "Oh yeah, and this finger just doesn't work like it used to." Well, what's that one do? Oh, that's the enter key.
I find I'm a guitar player and I find that if I'm coding for too long and then I go to try to play guitar, it takes me a good hour to limber up before I can actually start playing.
Right.
And I also find that since when I was coding a lot and then I would go play, one of my middle finger on my left hand actually froze at a 90 degree angle while I was playing one night.
Oh, my God.
I was playing, I guess I was playing it hard, yeah. Which I tend to press down hard on the frets anyway. And just at the first knuckle, you know, there's basically two knuckles in your middle finger. And at the bottom knuckle, it just was bent and would not move up. And I looked at Jay and I was like, dude, I can't play anymore. Look. And I held up my finger and, you know, my middle finger was bent at a 90-degree angle and I couldn't move it back. It was just like my muscle just said,
I am having that problem right now. My right hand, my middle finger locks up, bent fully in the middle of the night. And it just, who knows? Who knows? I blame computers.
Maybe it's time to break out the data hand again.
I think it's time to break out the voice recognition, but I would like to borrow your data hand keyboard though at some point. But yeah, I mean, those kinds of things, when one wants to create but one cannot, it's really difficult. I just watched this movie called The Diving Bell and the Butterfly.
Hmm.
Have you seen this? This is about a Frenchman who was paralyzed. He had a stroke, and the only thing that worked was one eye. It's a real story.
Hmm.
And he, Jean-Philippe Baudy, I think was his name. And he was like a famous editor at like Vogue or something. Had this stroke and was locked in. He has locked in syndrome. He died.
Hmm.
And he wrote a book using just his eye. Basically, they would read letters to him in the order of frequency.
Wow.
So they'd go E, A, S, T, and he would blink when he got the letter he wanted.
Huh.
And he wrote an entire book. It's called The Diving Bell and the Butterfly. This was a guy who had to create. He had to justify his existence.
How long it took didn't matter because the creation process itself was very enjoyable.
Right. So apparently what he would do is he would memorize the passages the night before and memorize them and then sleep. And then when he woke up the next day, he would basically take his dictation assistant, which was a person who would read this to him, and he would blink and they would take down dictation. And they'd try to auto-complete the words as best they could. And he died just months after the book was done.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
I don't know if I'm going to write code to that level where I'm going to, you know, if I have only one finger left, I will write C# with it.
Right.
But I think that the point is, though, is that that personality type has to get their information out into the world, whether anyone's listening or not.
And I really got to get back to this whole mentor thing, you know, that I can't stress enough. I mean, maybe that's why I got into evangelism and I've really, you know, got into training and teaching. Because you know, I love seeing the light go on and I just want to be that person that, you know, went out of their way to help me when I needed it. And, you know, you get a person who's new to programming in a room with a bunch of programmers that are just doing their thing. It's pretty damn intimidating. And, you know, even sitting around and listening to them talk and stuff and they're just totally into what they're doing and, you know, you ask them a question and they're like, what are you, an idiot? You know, you risk feeling bad and putting you down and stuff. And you're just trying to figure out some basic stuff. And, I tell you, I mean, it was really,
you know, I think it's like that in any industry though. Like I have this theory, that I call the Top Gun Bar theory, which is that in any vertical, in any industry, whether it be computers or ice skating or karate or whatever, it's the same story. It's the Karate Kid story. It's the Top Gun story, which is, you know, new guy joins in, tough guys that are already there give him a hard time.
Right.
You know, they fight, they struggle. New guy proves that he can do it. And then at some point in the bar where the, you know, where all the tough guys hang out, one of the guys goes over and kind of chucks him on the chin and says, "You're all right, kid."
Yeah.
You know, so I think that would be cool. You know, if one of my heroes, one of my programming heroes would kind of come over and go, "Hey, You're all right. You're all right, handsome."
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? And then we'd all go to the bar and hang out and, have beer nuts or something.
Right.
I think everyone has it. I mean, I bet you that there's like a knitting pool where someone wants to get into knitting.
Yeah.
And they go and they, you know, the really tough knitting, you know, the Iceman of knitting is really cruel to them. And then at the end, they go, "Oh, you're all right. You can knit."
Yeah. Well, you know, like I said, it certainly is tough. And especially because not a lot of, the people who are knowledgeable about this stuff tend to be just so focused and wrapped up into what they're doing. But, you know, there was just some very, very few, very cool people back in the early days who would actually sit down and you know, I got to tell you, the guys at Crescent Software were like made a career out of that. Where I cut my teeth back in the early days, they would write assembly language routines that you could call from Quick Basic, and they would put out these free pamphlets about assembly language, you know, assembly language primer. they would comment and give away their assembly language source code. They wanted people to know how to do it. And it wasn't, you know, maybe it was because there was a psychological need to do that. You know, that's how they felt good about themselves or whatever. But okay, fine. You're sharing your knowledge. You know, you're giving me inspiration and it's great. It's a win-win. So, I mean, I was that those kinds of relationships and those kinds of people and companies that those are the kinds of people I want to, you know, when I'm teaching, right? When I'm teaching a class, there are days that are, you know, the lights are on, but nobody's home. I look out to a sea of gaping eyes, you know, and they're just half falling asleep. Maybe they're a little bored, whatever. And then there's one guy up front or one girl up front who's like looking up the ceiling and saying, okay, wait a minute. Can you say that again? You know, and you can see the, like, the wheels going and it just like it clicks for them.
Oh,
and they're
yeah.
like, oh, I get. Okay. So
yeah, it's so cool to hear that from someone, because sometimes I think I'm the only one that thinks that kind of stuff.
Mm.
But, and I always joke sometimes in talks where I'll say, if I can just save the life of one child.
No, yeah, absolutely.
And one doesn't mean to use the word child in a diminutive, but it's just that we always hear that growing up, that that's why people teach.
Well, I mean, if you could reach
when you're talking
one
to a room of
way.
1,000 people and then suddenly, right. The guy who's clearly eager enough to have sat in the front row.
And here's the thing. Those are the people you want on your team. You know what I mean?
And he goes,
you want
oh,
people like that
oh.
because they're not
go,
afraid.
Boom, he got it.
They're not afraid to learn and they're not afraid to show what they don't know. And, you know, the more they're asking these questions and learning and stuff that, you know, they're going to surpass the people who are just afraid to look stupid and are therefore going to stay stupid.
So what can we do to make the community more friendly? I mean, I think the alt.net movement, we've talked to these guys, we talked to Dave Larrabee and the different folks that are thinking about alternative ways that are not necessarily the Microsoft, standard way. They have a lot to offer, but the barrier to entry is really difficult.
Hmm.
It's not exactly the most, it's not something you jump into. And I get lots of emails that say, well, how do I get started? What can I do? Where's the book? Everyone's like, where's the book I can read? That magical thing that's going to make it snap. How can we make it snap for people?
Well, I mean, I think we do. I think just by having these conversations, having these podcasts and talking and speaking and being engaged and involved on our blogs and things like this, I think we do make a difference and we get email to that effect all the time. But I would like to encourage the listeners to be that person, to be that mentor, to actually, you know, starting with the man in the mirror, change the world by changing yourself and being that sort of, you know, champion. Because it's literally, you will change people's lives. You will save their lives. People will owe their career to you just by sharing a little bit of time and knowledge and helping somebody not feel stupid and overcome.
Well, you know, and
I would
extend that and say that you don't even have to necessarily be an expert. And certainly, you know, I know some stuff, but I don't claim to be an expert in many, many things.
Yeah.
But just because you've been in the business for a long time and you're not out of work and homeless, means that you're doing something right.
Yep.
So you don't necessarily have to be the best at X technology to sit down with someone who's maybe just out of college or only a couple of years in the industry and help them out.
But I mean, you know, you set a good example by showing people how to learn things when they don't know them and how to look things up and, you know, where to go to get good information and all of that.
Exactly.
And just by answering some simple questions. You never know. I mean, some people will have a mental block about something, and once they get over that block, they realize, oh, this isn't so hard, I can do this, and then they're off. You know, it could be just one thing. So.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, I think that's a show.
I think so, too.
Well, it's nice to have you back. We should do this more often.
Yeah, we should. We should, and I'm happy to anytime you want, but, you know, if you want to do interviews by yourself, too, that's totally cool with me. I've been enjoying the time off, but it's always good to talk to you, Scott.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot, and this has been another episode of Hansel Minutes. We'll see you again next week.
Bye-bye.